With that, I'm happy to introduce Geisinger's President and CEO, Dr. Ajay Wanru.
Thank you, Matt, and thank you, everybody, for joining us again today, as we do with these and have been doing with these all along. We're going to share with you some of the latest and greatest of what we're seeing, or in this case, latest and not so greatest, because we are seeing concerning trends. You'll also notice I'm keeping my mask on for this one because normally we mask, and then just for this press conference, I take the mask off, but in light of the governor's guidance and recommendation recently, I'm going to leave the mask on given we're indoors. The other thing you'll notice that's a little different is that we're actually going to incorporate some slides as I give you the factoids and the data on the belief that sometimes a picture is worth a thousand words, and you'll see what I mean because some of these things are pretty compelling, and we want to share that with you. So let me go ahead and start by saying that we are seeing very concerning community trend, and the spread is pretty prevalent in our communities, and I'll get to the facts here and the data in a second. It's unprecedented. I think it's the capacity demands at this point are well beyond what we saw back in the spring. In fact, as far as the number of patients with COVID in our hospitals, you know, that demand we've seen since November 9th blow past where we were back in April, and we're probably even 40-50% higher than that at this point. So what that suggests, if you piece all the evidence together, including the positive testing rate, which has also climbed, but if you start looking at all of that together, what it suggests is that we have community spread. And so it becomes even more critical to tackle all of the precautionary measures that we've been talking about all along. So let me go ahead and also make a quick note because, of course, with Thanksgiving coming upon us, I think we're all concerned because, of course, Thanksgiving brings sometimes large family gatherings, and we want to make sure that, you know, people are still being mindful of the distancing and limitations that really help to stop the spread of the virus. But as far as the data itself, just to orient you all, a couple weeks ago, we were probably looking at a positive testing rate of about 9%. And since then, over the last couple weeks, we've seen that climb to about 14%, meaning of the number of people that we test every day, about 14% were coming positive in the 2 weeks since then. But more concerning is that has continued to climb, where over the last several days, that's now turned into over 20% positive testing rate as far as the percentage of people that we test who are subsequently testing positive. Now, that in and of itself is one fact, but then, of course, we also look at how many of those people are landing inside our hospitals, because the hospital admission criteria has not fundamentally changed throughout the pandemic. And so if we're seeing those numbers climb, then we're truly seeing more people who are coming down with sicker versions of the virus, enough to merit a hospitalization. And so a little bit about those numbers. We had about 130 patients positive in our hospitals back in April, third week of April or so at our peak, or may have been early May. At this point, we are up above 190 admitted patients with COVID, closing in on 200 and rapidly climbing. And so that's obviously very concerning. As I mentioned before, every day since November 9th, we have seen an increase. And that November 9th was the day that we surpassed the prior peak from the spring. And the last time we had a press conference with you, I gave you the statistic or the factoid that every couple hours we're seeing somebody with COVID get admitted to Geisinger. We are now seeing that happen once every hour. And so you could get the sense that this thing is picking up steam in a way that I don't think any of us are happy about. The other is, given that the positive testing rate is continuing to climb, we can tell you that it's still going to get worse, or the worst is still yet to come, because those positive tests, as we've said all along, We've seen fairly consistently that within the week or two following that, the demand for hospital services also tends to follow and spike. And so those are the things that give us pause as we head into Thanksgiving and the cold weather months. I wanted to take a moment, though, and also debunk some myths, because I think we continue to hear some misunderstanding around the nature of the virus. So I wanted to share some facts with you all. I think myth number one that we hear an awful lot is that, well, it's mostly the nursing home population. Well, that's not what we see. Our nursing home population is really only making up about 10 to 15% of those that we have admitted in our hospitals. That means 85 to 90% of the patients that we have with COVID positive in our hospitals are not nursing home patients. We also see that, or hear, a lot of people think that, well, it's only for those who are older than 65 or have a lot of chronic diseases. Well, that's not true either. It is true that if you're older, or if you have chronic diseases, you are at a higher risk. But in our hospitals over the last several weeks and even months, we have seen that about two-thirds of our patients are over the age of 65, but that means a solid one-third. And the last time I came to you that week, it was upwards of 41% are younger than 65, and believe it or not, half of them are younger than 55. And so it gives you a sense of the fact that people are young, and sometimes don't have any chronic diseases, and yet can get very, very ill from this virus. The other notable trend that we're seeing is that people in their 20s, 30s, and 50s are contributing to the highest jump in testing rate. And we're seeing the 20s and 30s, of course, again, this population, they are at lower risk for needing hospitalization, but they are rapidly comprising a larger and larger share of who is testing positive. And of course, even if they don't fall severely ill with the virus, they could spread it to others if we're not following the precautions. And so we want to make sure to urge and encourage everybody to do that, because it's critically important, and to maintain the need for the restrictions. And so we have, for any of you that have come on to our facilities, you know that we have visitation restrictions. We have screening at every door, required masking, distancing in the various spaces. All of those things are absolutely necessary. And if I broaden it out to the community beyond Geisinger, all of those actions to maintain distancing efforts, to mask anytime you're gonna be around others, all of those efforts continue to be, and if anything, are even more important now than ever before. The other thing that I want to touch on is that we all have gotten a lot better, however, at treating the virus. You know, we've learned a lot in these last 10 months, 9.5 months, and we've also known and learned exactly how to limit the spread. And so as a part of doing that, we've been able to keep all of our facilities safe. We've been able to keep all of our clinics and hospitals and places that people come and seek care from us absolutely safe. And it's because we focus on those precautions. Now we need to make sure as a community that we're focusing on those same kind of precautions in every place of our community, not just the healthcare environments. Doing that will actually save lives. We've seen it in the numbers. So I want to touch a little bit and shift gears. Those are the numbers. Now let me tell you a little bit more about what we're doing. I mentioned the visitation restrictions, the precautions, the social distancing, and all of that. I think the other thing, we are very proud. This was mentioned earlier in the week on the Today Show and also covered in the USA Today, the Wall Street Journal, and the New York Times. We are very proud to be one of 100 other health systems across the country that have joined together. And it includes organizations that we have great relationships with otherwise, such as Johns Hopkins and the Cleveland Clinic. But we basically joined for this thing called the Mask Up campaign. And it's really trying to spread the word and get the news out there of how important it is for all of our communities to mask up. Now, think about trying to get 100 different health systems on the same page with a single message. That's not easy. You know, that's the epitome of herding cats. And yet you have these organizations locking arms to say the same thing, that should tell you a lot about how important this is. Another thing we've been able to roll out is, you all know we have our COVID hotlines, and we also have these COVID triage lines. And given the case counts are climbing so rapidly, we have also had our teams working really hard to bring automation into those areas so that folks who have had a test, we can deliver that result without having someone from the call center tied up on the phone line trying to get a hold of the people to give them that result, and instead doing it through an automated process, either for inbound or outbound calls. That's just an example of the kind of things that we're putting in place to continue to battle the virus and to continue to bring key services in a timely manner in an easy way to the patients and communities that we serve. The other I should note, you've heard us use the analogy before, that back in the spring, we had to flip things on and off like a light switch. And you've all read and heard about health systems, hospitals across the country back in the spring had to cancel elective non-urgent procedures. Now, the urgent procedures, of course, they have clinical urgency. They have to go on. And we did that, as did many others. But the non-urgent or the less urgent clinical procedures were canceled back in the spring. And luckily, our teams worked really hard, big, big testament to them throughout the summer to work through that backlog. And we said, if there is ever a second wave, back in May, we started working on what we call our second wave playbook. And that second wave playbook was all about, rather than shutting things down like a light switch, that we would use more of a dimmer approach so that we can turn the dials and make sure that we had adequate staffing and adequate capacity to accommodate all of the COVID needs while at the same time still being able to accommodate all the other care needs. We put the dimmer into motion. And so over the last couple of weeks, we've actually dialed down some of our elective procedures by about 10 or 15%. And that's afforded us the capacity and the staffing to absorb some of this increase in surge and activity that we're seeing as a result of the virus. Just another example of the kind of ongoing management that we're doing to keep everybody safe and still meet the needs of the communities that we serve. For more information, as I always do, I want to direct you all to our website. I got to read this off here, geisinger.org/coronavirus, and that'll give you all of the information around our procedures, our approaches, where can you get more information on testing and criteria and so forth, frequently asked questions, a lot of information there. And given how quickly information is shifting and changing and how rapidly things are evolving, we think that's probably the best site to direct you all to. So let me shift gears again. And in closing, I want to say a couple things before we get to the Q&A here. One is we know that there's a lot coming up here. Thanksgiving is one, flu season is another. Of course, the December holidays with Christmas and New Year's and colder weather as well. That poses some challenges. And we know that families are prone to get together and sometimes even travel to see one another. We would exercise extreme caution, and that's what we're urging here. We would encourage you to exercise extreme caution because anybody who's not in your household, they really can be a carrier of this virus. And so we gotta be extra careful in making sure that we're maintaining our distance. Of course, if you're going to be anywhere within earshot of somebody, we recommend keeping the mask on. And of course, indoors with the governor's mandate, that's now something that we would love to see across the state. And then outdoor gatherings, obviously, we've always said that that's much lower risk than indoor gatherings. But even there, avoiding large gatherings is going to be absolutely critical. And then making sure we always pay attention to hand hygiene. And so forth. And so I know that that puts a little bit of a damper on everybody's Thanksgiving plans, but whatever you can do to do as much on the way of prevention and precautionary measures as possible, I think that will help us continue to maintain the functions of not just health systems like ours, but also small businesses, schools, and all the other things that keep our communities going. curbing that spread is going to be instrumental to our ability to continue to do that. So I don't really come to you today as the CEO of Geisinger. I come to you as a member of the community, you know, a parent myself. This is something we could all take part in. And I think it's really incumbent on all of us, because the health systems can only do so much. But this is one where if we rally together as a community and focus on these efforts, I think we'll be in a much better spot. So I encourage you all to do that. And I'll turn it back over to you, Matt, because I think we have some questions that are starting to gather, right?
We do. Thank you, Dr. Rue. The first came from the Press Enterprise and WKOK asking, how close is GMC, specifically Geisinger Medical Center in Danville, to capacity with ICU and COVID beds?
So as I mentioned earlier, we're always monitoring that literally by the day, by the hour. And we've gotten really good with our data and analytics team being able to project out not just what we're anticipating today or tomorrow, but also what we think the virus is going to do in the next week or two. And based on that, we're able to dial down some of the other inputs, like those elective procedures, to be able to accommodate that demand. But at the same time, we know that the surge that we're seeing over the last several weeks, and we expect that it will continue here, that's going to pose extra challenges. There's no doubt about it. And one of the things that we always look at is, of course, beds and vents and things like that. But the other is staffing. And if you think about staffing, our staff are no different than other members in the community, because we're reflections of the communities in which we live. And so if we have big community spread, that means that some of our staff are also going to be impacted by that, which means that they can't be delivering care to folks who need it. And so that brings me back, not to sound like a broken record, but brings me back to all of the things that I mentioned earlier. It's why it's so important as a community that we stem the tide of this thing with all those precautionary efforts.
Again, from the Press Enterprise and WKOK, you hinted on it a bit, but what are current plans for elective procedures and routine appointments? Is there any urgency to get those scheduled before the pandemic worsens?
No, so, well, I would say the pandemic has worsened. That's what's gone on over the last few weeks, as you heard me review the numbers with you all. But I think that's what we've been doing all along, is those less urgent or non-urgent elective procedures. As I said, with the dimmer switch, we've been dialing those back up or back down. And we have had several moments over the last couple weeks where we've had to dial it down, dial it back by about 10 or 15% to create that extra capacity. When we anticipate we should be in a good spot in the coming days, we're able to resume the activity levels back to 100%. So that's going to be the ongoing management that we do. What all of you can do is help us get the word out around the precautions and stopping the spread of the virus, because that'll help us manage that, which means it'll help us continue to deliver the care that's needed in the communities. Because some of these things, they may be not as urgent, but they're still problems that need to be taken care of. I'll give you some examples of just things that I hear from letters written to us, but people that have nagging knee pain and they're due for their knee replacement, or maybe they had a hernia that's been on and off and they're due to get that repaired. Well, those things may not be emergencies, but clearly they're uncomfortable and they're creating challenges for people who have those issues. And so the sooner we can get through those, the sooner those people's lives can get back on track. And so I think it really is important, in order to deliver the kind of care that people are needing, for us to be able to make sure to stem the tide of this virus.
The Daily Item asks, what are your recommendations for students returning from college?
So this is a tough one. I mean, obviously with the holidays come a lot of students that do come back from elsewhere. I think much like anybody coming back from elsewhere, I think the separation is going to be a key step. Or, you know, if they get tested before or upon entry back, I think those are some ways to really know for sure that someone is okay. But in the absence of that, I think you really should be separating from those folks. And as one of our clinical leaders likes to say, you know, when you have somebody that you have not been living with in your household, you've got to view them as a microbiological stranger danger. I mean, that's just the reality of what's going on right now. And until you know, And there are two ways you can know. They either test or they quarantine for 14 days and stay separate. We've also said, if you recall back in the spring, that, you know, how do you stay separate when you live in the same household? And I think the answer to that is, well, it kind of depends on what type of setup you have. And some folks are more able to do that than others, depending on the layout of their house. But if you're able to separate where you're eating meals or bathrooms or things like that, I think those are some tricks to maintain that separation for the 14 days while children come back from college.
WKOK asks, knowing that your partnership with Evangelical is up in the air at the moment, how do you plan to be a helping hand?
Oh, well, I think that the partnership with Evangelical, I mean, whether or not that is happening or what process that's going through, I think regardless, we have a long history of partnering because we're two organizations that care deeply for the community. And so even just last night, we were on the same sort of virtual town hall that we did with others, and, you know, getting information out to the communities and making sure that we're all doing our part to try to encourage the prevention. I think that's how we're going to continue to partner with them. I mean, these are two organizations between us and Evan that have always been focused on bettering the health of the communities that we serve. And when you're pinned against that same North Star, believe it or not, it becomes pretty easy to collaborate and make sure you're focused on the same things.
WKOK and the Lewistown Sentinel reached out about the new travel guidelines from the state. Can anyone without symptoms get a test at Geisinger given these new restrictions? And what is the cost for an uninsured individual?
So we get the testing question a lot, and we continue to abide by testing criteria as set forth by the regulatory agencies. And so I think for us, we have a bunch of criteria. I think the website is a good way to do that, or calling our hotline. If you're symptomatic, absolutely, you should be tested. If you're asymptomatic, meaning you don't have any symptoms, depending on whether or not you fit into a higher risk group, you may not need to be tested. And so working through those questions is something that, you know, we should let our clinical experts take care of. And then as far as whether the testing is covered and so forth, it really is dependent on whoever is your insurance company. So we encourage everybody to contact their insurance company about whether or not those things are tested. I could tell you what we do for our insurance company, GHP. If you have a lab test, a COVID test that's been ordered by a credentialed physician, and you get it in a lab that is part of our network, then that's a covered test. And so, but that's just us. So depending on who your insurance is, you'd have to go and ask them what their policies are.
So we have a follow-up from WKOK. Will Geisinger be able to take patients from Evangelical, or do you prioritize them within the health system?
No, I think the way that we typically do it is if there's an open bed and there's a patient that has need, we go ahead and allow for that transfer. I think that's how we've always done it. That has not changed. But we know, obviously, when we have patients in our system that need to go from one place to another, we have line of sight on that. And so that goes into how we plan. But we never, if we have an open bed, if there's someone out there that's got the need, whether it's within the Geisinger system or outside, we do that matching right away.
From the Lewistown Sentinel, the Commonwealth now wants anyone leaving the state, with few exceptions, to be tested 72 hours prior to return or upon return, or to quarantine for 14 days upon return. How would you advise someone meet this order?
Yeah, so I think I would meet the order exactly how it's laid out. I think that's a reasonable approach. I think there's, as a healthcare system, you know, and our workforce, that there may be some nuances to that, but for the general population, I think that's probably a reasonable approach. It gets back to the earlier question about kids returning from college. Really, technically, those kids should be quarantining for 14 days until you really know for sure, no symptoms, 14 days. Then I think it's safe. And if you want sooner than that, it's got to be through a negative test.
The Daily Item asks, what are your thoughts on indoor events, particularly sports? Are they doable in this sort of climate?
this is always a balance. I think a lot of people want the black and white, and I'm not sure there is a black and white, but here's what I would say is we have said all along that outdoor activities are safer, lower risk than indoor activities. We've also said that if there are indoor activities, being masked is safer than not being masked. We've also said that if you're indoors in particular, you really need to avoid any gatherings of large amounts of people. And large can be defined in any host of ways, but it kind of depends on the size of the building that you're in. And so if you're in, you know, a room or a single gym or something like that, I think that's a smaller space. So you would need to limit to smaller numbers of people versus if you're in a wide field house or something like that, you may be able to fit, you know, 10, 20 people, and that feels okay, especially if they're masked. So I think these are all sort of considerations in determining what has greater or lesser risk. But I think the big thing for us that we've been urging since the beginning really has been that outdoor activities, granted it's getting colder, and of course, masking if you're going to be around anybody, and otherwise avoiding large gatherings, whether it's, you know, 10, 20 people, depending on the size, you know, definitely those numbers even are too large if you're talking about someone's home.
From the Lewistown Sentinel, the biggest roadblock we've heard for testing is that most insurers will not cover it without the test being administered under CDC guidelines, but will cover it fully if it meets the guideline. What can we do to ensure people who believe they may have COVID or are concerned about it get an answer?
Yeah, so that gets back to the criteria. I mean, these are pretty well-defined criteria, and there are those who have symptoms. That's clearly an indication for testing. And then for folks who don't have symptoms, but are they part of a higher risk pool with an exposure or potential exposure or a scenario or environment by virtue of where they're living or so forth that may have created a higher risk for exposure. I think those are the considerations that go into play. And that is, you know, what is sort of deemed from the regulatory side. Now, there are other use cases of potential testing that have nothing to do with those criteria. I think those are the scenarios where it's much less likely to be covered, but there are sort of out-of-pocket tests available for those kind of scenarios, whether it's, you know, you want to travel to a place that requires the test or something like that. I think those are things that don't meet that criteria. Doesn't mean you can't get them. There are ways to get them, but you'd have to go to a lab that is allowed to do those kinds of tests in those kinds of scenarios. And I think most insurance companies, from what I've heard at least, do not cover those kinds of tests.